Gemilus chasod v'ikra godel chasidim ki chasidus asmo nigzo mechesed. Chasidus and gemilus chesed go together. And al gimel dvarim ha'olam omeid ve'echod me'am gemilus chasodim. The world exists for three things: Torah, avoda, and gemilus chasodim. V'chein manu zal im hadvarim she'ochel peroseim bolam hazeh ba'keren kayemes olam haba. These are things that you reap the benefits in this world, and the acre is saved for Olam Haba. V'amru o dorish Reb Malai Torah tchilasa gemilus chasodim v'sofa gemilus chasodim. Torah starts with Chesed, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu clothed Adam and Chava after the Chet, and it ends with gemilus chasodim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu buried Moshe Rabbeinu. What is this idea of Gemilus Chasodim and Chasidus? We said Chasidus is going beyond the letter of the law, doing things out of love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any personal goal or intention. And what does that have to do with Gemilus Chasodim? Gemilus Chasodim is giving to other people, kindness, whatever. It's not only giving money, but giving of your time, of your expertise, whatever it may be. So what is the connection concerning it? So the Pirkei Avos defines a chassid as shali shalcha v'shalcha shalcha, person who is totally selfless. What I have is yours, what you have is yours, right? Totally selfless. Rashi says chassidus is mevater al shalo, what's rightfully mine I'm willing to give up. That's what a chassid is. Therefore, I can stick to the letter of the law and do what's expected of me. Or I can do things because I want to benefit from them or whatever. That's all thinking about myself. But giving up of myself completely, I'm not sticking within what I have to do. I want to do more because I have total love for the Ribbono Shel Olam and go beyond what I have to do. That's also the idea of chassidus. And that's why the Torah starts with Chesed and ends with Chesed, because the Torah is the expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chesed for us. And the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, it's total giving. The Ribbono Shel Olam has no idea of taking and no idea of doing anything for himself. He doesn't need anything. So it's total for our sake, totally for our sake. The Torah, therefore, is the greatest Chesed there could be. And therefore, the way the Torah starts and it ends shows what the Torah is. Torah is chesed, right? And the chesed works in two ways. The Ribbono Shel Olam created a world, and he gave us the ability to earn, create Olam Haba, and that was his original chesed. And then we mess things up. So the Ribbono Shel Olam's ultimate chesed is not to forget about the whole thing, but to give us a chance to recoup and to regain what he wants to give us. He doesn't give up on us. So that's what it means. The people use their body. They're supposed to use their body to perfect their neshama, and then the neshama would perfect the body, the Derech Hashem says, or Ramchal says, and then they would elevate and ascend to Olam Haba without dying. Right? Just the body would elevate the neshama through the things it did in this world. The neshama then would elevate the body because it's a more elevated neshama, until the body and the neshama both became spiritual and just graduated into Olam Haba. That was what was supposed to be. But because Adam and Chava sinned and they used their body in a way that did not elevate their neshama, just the opposite, so now they had to be separated, and the body is corrected in its way by burial, and the neshama is corrected in Gared Gehenna after death, and then they're united again for Olam Haba. So the Ribbono Shel Olam's intention in this world was total chesed, and when we messed up, so the Ribbono Shel Olam could have said, forget it, you're not getting anything anymore, but instead he took that body that was now shameful because it functioned in a way that was against its best interest and against what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted. So the body now is shameful, so it needs to be covered. So the Ribbono Shel Olam covers the body, and he gives people now a chance from that point on. That's the whole Torah. After that is to correct the situation and to start using your body in a way that it won't be shameful, that you'll be able to elevate your neshama and eventually get Olam Haba. And therefore, what's the end of the Torah? Where the body becomes so holy that even after the neshama leaves it, only the Rebbe Nishon can bury it. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's it. Starts with a body that's shameful, that the Rebbe Nishon covers as a chesed to let people regain what they lost, and it ends with the goal that a person should make his body so holy that when his neshama leaves it, the Rebbe Nishon buries the body. That's the final chesed. So those two things represent what the Torah is all about. From the beginning of restoring that chesed in the way we know the world, till the goal of the chesed, that's the ultimate chesed, where the person's body and neshama become together spiritual. The idea of gemilus chasadim is not just where a person gives something to somebody else, right? As the Michtam Eliyahu says, that there are two kinds of people in this world. There's givers and there's takers. And a person should always strive to be a giver and not a taker. Okay. And Avraham Avinu was the pillar of chesed, and the hallmark of his chesed is he doesn't take from anybody. Avraham Avinu is constantly giving, bringing in guests and so on, and he doesn't take, because when Melech Sodom offered him all this riches, he refused to take even a shoelace. So Avraham Avinu is the giver, not the taker. So first of all, if everybody would follow that, so nobody would be able to give anything, because nobody would be taking. So we have to have at least one volunteer taker to make everybody givers. Okay, that's one thing. Secondly, Avraham Avinu took God's fine 3 times out of 4. Right? When Paro in Lech Lecha gave him presents, Avraham didn't say, sorry, I don't take presents. He took very nicely. When Avimelech in last week's Sedra gave him presents, he took it. When Malki Tzedek gave him Lechem the Yayin, and he also, according to some opinions, gave him Meiser. Well, the Pashup Shad is that Avraham gave Meiser to Malki Tzedek. But there are those who showed him to learn the opposite. Malki Tzedek gave Meiser to Avraham. He took. So 3 out of 4 times Avraham took, and 1 time he didn't. So he's a giver, not a taker. He seems to me like a nice kind of nice taker too. Where's the big chesed? If you don't take. The idea of chesed also is connected to emuna. It says kol hagomel chesed ki ilu molde b'chol anisim shosak kodesh baruch hu motzionu mimitzrayim b'chol she'eno gomel chesed ki ilu kofer. Person who does chesed as if he believes in all the nisim that happened when we went out of Mitzrayim, and a person who doesn't do chesed as if he doesn't believe. Now what in the world is chesed? Is being on the chadero, being a giver. What does that have to do with emuna? There's a lot of people who have emuna and b'chor not bali chesed, and there are people who don't have any emuna and yes or be bali chesed. So b'chor doesn't depend one on the other. Thirdly, and this all has to do with this week's Sedra, Rivka. Right, Eliezer has to give her a test to see if she is fit to join the house of Avraham. So what's the test? Will she give water to his camels? Is she a kind person? It's very nice being a kind person, but there's a lot of other important things when you look for a shidduch. Right? When you call for information about somebody and they tell you, oh, they're very kind-hearted, right? They're very kind. They usually give drinks to camels, right? People usually don't stop with that. Like, they want to know much more important things. Like, do they stack their dishes? What kind of tablecloth do they use for Friday night? Or even more important things, are they frum? Right? Do they have Yirat Shamayim? Right? There's other things besides, do you give drinks to camels? So why was that the only test? That was going to make the difference whether Rivka can join the household of Avraham or not. Right? She's a balas chesed. Fine. Maybe she's not frum. Maybe she's not shomer Shabbos. Right? Maybe she's a prutza. What? There's other things, sneas, that to look into. Why was this the test? So, basically, the idea of chesed, this idea of giving, doesn't depend on necessarily who is giving out and who is receiving. Sometimes you can receive and you're called the giver. And sometimes you can give out and you're called the receiver. You're the taker. in addition to that, chesed is not just giving something what they need, but it's much, much more than that. Chesed is the ability, and that's what has to do with chasidus. Like we said, chasidus is being able to be beyond your own ego. Not think about yourself, but do things altruistically. You do bein adam lemakom for God's sake, not for your sake. Out of total love, that's chasidus. And therefore, when you do bein adam lechaveiro, it's also total giving for the other person's sake, not for your sake. Okay? And that's why it says, gadol hachnosis orchim, yotzer mehakbalas p'nei hashchina. What in the world is hachnosis orchim? We learned from last week's sedra. Right? Avram told the Rabbanu Shalom, hang on, I got more important things to do than talk to you. I got to go bring in some guests. So we learn from that that it's more important to bring in guests than and they say they so I think there was Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky maybe, or maybe Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, one of them said l'halacha, that if a person has guests and they need him and he has to go daven, then he doesn't daven. He takes care of his guests. If he there's no, it's either davening or taking care of the guests and they absolutely need you, you take care of the guests. Because Godel hachnosas orchim yosem yakbalas b'nei hashchina. Davening is hakbalas b'nei hashchina. Take care of the guests. So, what does that mean? What's the connection? I was thinking the idea is a person's home is his castle. That's my place. That's my territory. It's me. My home is my extension of me. Person who can make room for other people in his home and give up his place for somebody else, that's the ultimate chesed. Mamash, the ultimate chesed. And that's exactly what the Rabbanu Shalom did. The Rabbanu Shalom is everywhere. He's everything. When he created the world, he made place for other people. He made place for us to exist in his place. Kibiyachol. He's Makomo Shalolam. And he made a makom that exists in that makom, which means he made a place for other people to exist. So Hachnosis Orchim is emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where you're able to give of your thing, your place, your what you are to somebody else and put them in your place. That's what the Rabbi Muslim did. So Hakbalas Pnei Hashchina is observing God. Hachnosis Orchim is emulating God. The purpose of observing Him is to emulate Him. So what's greater? The observation or the actual kiyum? That's why it says Hachnosis Orchim is better than Hakbalas Pnei Hashchina. But that's the idea of chesed. Chesed is being able to divest yourself of your needs, your subjectivity, your what you would like, and do something totally for somebody else. Either for the Rebbe Shalom or for people. It's the same idea. That's what chasidus is. That's what chesed is. Therefore, chesed and emuna go together. Because as long as a person is subjective, he's not going to have really a chance to really believe in the Rebbe Shalom. He'll believe in the Rebbe Shalom up until where it encroaches on his desires. And then you see what you want to see. And you believe what you want to believe. Plenty of people are big, maminim, from people, but as soon as they have their own negiyas and netiyas, the amuna is not so much there. It's in the background. You do what you want to do and you believe what you want to believe. The pasuk says, "Lo sasuru achri levadchem v'achrei neichem v'achrei levadchem." If your heart is minus, it's false ideologies. When Rabbi Chanan explains, false ideologies don't come from your intellect; they come from your heart, because people believe what they want. If a person would be totally objective, he'd see God everywhere. It's an orderly universe, everything you see, there must be a creator to all of this. Can't just be haphazard, right? It doesn't appear like that objectively. And everybody has the knowledge that there must be a supreme power. Every Ovid Avod Zorah, every goy in the world, sociologically, believes in a higher power. They may distort what that higher power is, but they believe that there's something beyond them. So why are they atheists who don't believe in anything? Because they don't want to believe. Not because there's intellectual reason not to believe, because they don't want to believe. Because if I believe in a God, then there's order to this world, and I have to fit into the design that designer designed. I'm not interested in doing that. I want to be Hefker. So we always say that's a pshat, that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write Nase Adam Betzalmenu, let us make man. He said, I can't write this. You're giving a pischon peh to the minim, to the Christians, to the people who believe in more than one God. It says plural, let us make man. So the Rambam said, you write, v'harotza litoshita. A person who wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. Not that the Rambam didn't care, but he said it doesn't help. Anybody who's objective is going to look at this pasuk. It says Nasa Adam, and the end of the pasuk says Vayas Elokim in the singular. And Rashi says the reason it says in the plural because the Rabbanu Shalom asked advice from the angels. So anybody who wants to be objective will not make any mistake in this pasuk. Nobody ever became an apikoros in first grade because it says Nasa Adam. They got up and went to the convent, you know, to the parochial school down the block. Never happened. It didn't happen in seventh grade. Didn't happen to anybody who opens a chumash and learns this about tshuva. Nobody ever became. You look at Rashi and he explained to you, and the end of the pasuk says in the singular and finished. But apikorsim bring proof from here. You want to make a mistake, you can distort anything. Anything. I think I've told over the story many times of the guy who thought he was Mashiach, the goy. He wrote a letter to clergymen to prove he's Mashiach. And to convince them to convince his congregants, their congregants, that he is Mashiach. This was like 40 years ago, 35 years ago. No, more than that. Whatever. 46 years ago. Look, I have a trouble remembering this morning, so 46 years ago. So the guy said, look, I'm Mashiach. And I have to get the word out to the world. And the internet didn't exist then. So, and to write letters to everybody in the world was a lot of money. So he figured out this following idea. He said, I'm going to write to priests, rabbis, ministers, convince them I'm Mashiach, and ask them then to convince their congregants. So with one letter I can get to hundreds of people, at least tens of people. So the rabbi I was staying at in New York, who happened to be one of my shatchanim, got a letter from this guy. He's a goy. Those times goyim thought they were Mashiach. And the goy said, I am Mashiach. I'd like to introduce myself. And I have 10 conclusive proofs that I am Mashiach. After you read this letter and you are convinced that I'm Mashiach, could you please go and tell the good news to your congregants and convince them? I don't remember any of the other things. I remember the first one. And the other ones were pretty much the same. The first proof was that it says in Yeshayahu that Moshiach will be lamala mimalachim, literally into English translated, above kings. He said it clearly refers to me, there's no doubt, because in the apartment underneath me there are two dogs named King. And that puts me above kings. So if you're not convinced by that, I have 9 other proofs, he says, but this is like the most conclusive. That Yeshayahu was talking about me. So again, harotza litos. Person wants to make a mistake and distort anything. He'll make anything what he wants. Right? He has the ability to blind his eyes from the truth and to distort things. So therefore, emuna depends on being objective. So a person who only sees his own needs, everything is me, is going to have a very hard time to see the Ribbono Shel Olam. Even if he's a maimon, the time's going to come when belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam conflicts with his desires, and then he's going to distort his belief. He'll change his belief a little bit to fit what he wants. Only a person who's totally objective can really see the Ribbono Shel Olam. They say that, what's the difference between a window and a mirror? Right? A window, you see the whole world. And a mirror, you just see yourself. The difference, he says, a little kesef. Put a little silver on the window, it becomes a mirror. Right? Kesef means money, but it also means kisufim, desire. Because money, you buy what you desire. You can put your manifest your desires through the money. So that's why it's called kesef. So if you have desires, you don't see anything but yourself. And everything you see, you... assess it through what you want to see. Sometimes that's okay, and sometimes very not okay. But if you can divest yourself of your self-interest and your subjectivity, your bias, then you see the whole world. Then you see the Rabbanu Shalom too. So therefore, emuna and chesed. Chesed is being able to divest yourself of your own personal needs and think about somebody else only. And not just think about them and do something for them, because you can do that in a way that's also for yourself. The example, I don't remember if we spoke about this, I think I spoke about the drasha, but it was only a minor part, so I'm going to mention it again and say three other things also. Of what real chesed is. If you understand what real chesed is, and we'll see that Rivka was capable of doing that, then there's no problem. Anybody who Eliezer is going to find is not going to be on the level to marry Yitzchak as she is. Impossible. She's going to need to be educated, right, and influenced, or whatever. He was looking for somebody with the potential. Somebody who is able to be selfless, was an easy person to teach emuna, and to become a tzaddikus. Somebody who's not capable of doing that is not the potential. So therefore, the whole test of Rivka was, can she be selfless? Can she be a balas chesed with chachma, and to divest herself of what would make her look good and the needs of somebody else? And then we'll get to that in a second, how that worked. But let's first see this idea that chesed is not just giving to somebody else, but giving to them in a way that you're serving their needs and not your needs at all. So let's take Avraham Avinu and last week's Sedra. I think I did mention this in the Drasha. Avraham Avinu brings these guests home. He has a beautiful tent, four doors, right? Probably a beautiful dining room table and a chandelier, right? And he puts them outside on a picnic table and gives them food outside. Doesn't bring him into his house. Now, any one of us, right, would have guests. You bring them in your house. You don't leave them outside. If I would leave my guests outside, my wife would have my head. What kind of host are you? Bring them inside. Treat them nicely. So he leaves them outside, and he got rewarded for that. Got the mitzvah of sukkah because he fed them under the tree. So it must have been something positive about feeding them under the tree. So I'd like to say that Avraham Avinu had these people, and they were in a rush. They were traveling. If he would have said, look, do me a favor, come into my house for a few minutes, you know, I want to be kind of mitzvah of chesed, that wouldn't have been in their best interest. Because when you're in a rush, you have to make an appointment, you have to make a plane, and somebody says, could you come to my house just for a minute? You're right away intimidated because you're looking at your watch, how many get out of here, right? You can't just walk out of somebody's house. And once you're there, you're on spilkes, you know, I got to get out of here. And you can't just walk out, it's not nice. So Avraham Avinu said to them, look, I could be a nice host, you know, I'd like to be a good host and put you at a table or whatever, but that's not what you need. What you need is to be able to eat and run, because you're in a rush. So I'm not even going to bring you into my house. I'm not going to make you feel uncomfortable. Eat under the tree, there's milchiks, eat and run. If you're not really in a rush, you just said that because you didn't want me to go to any bother, but you really have time, then there's fleishiks to eat if you want to wait around, right? If that's better for you. You decide. I'm not doing this so I can say I'm a good host. I'm doing it that you can get what you need. And even if it does, I look pretty bad. What kind of host am I? But that's what you need. That's chesed. Chesed is not thinking about yourself. I always like to give two examples where a person can look like he's the giver, but he's really a taker. He's doing a chesed, but it's not really for the other person's sake. It's basically for his sake, even though it looks like he's giving. One example is Bikur Cholim. You go visit somebody in the hospital. Right? You spend money, car fare, whatever it may be, time. Finally get to the hospital, and you walk into the room where the person is, and he's sleeping. A chutzpah, I came to visit you, you're sleeping. So what kind of mitzvah are you going to get? The guy's sleeping. Most times in the hospital, people who are sick, right, would like to sleep. It's very hard to get to sleep when you're sick. Okay? My wife once told me years ago that the hardest thing in the hospital is to get to sleep, because when you finally get to sleep, they wake you up to take sleeping pills. Remember that? In any case. That I do remember. In any case. So, it's hard to get to sleep. Somebody's asleep. There's exceptions to the rule. Sometimes a person would like to be woken up and be visited. But many times a person would rather sleep. But you want your mitzvah. So if you're refined, you send the nurse in to see if they're really asleep, meaning wake them up, I'm here. Or if you're not so refined, you walk into the room, knock over a chair, make a lot of noise, person wakes up, and you say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. But you did mean to wake them because you want your mitzvah. So in that situation, you look like the giver, but you're really the taker. You're doing this to manipulate that person so you can get your mitzvah, bikur cholim. You're not doing what's good for them. What's good for them is let them sleep. Write a little note, I was here. Come back again. But you're doing what's good for you, but it looks like you're giving to them. I'll give you another example. Way back when I first started traveling, when I didn't have permanent hosts or whatever, so sometimes they put me up by people that I didn't know, they didn't know me. So they wanted to be good hosts, and they had good intentions. But when you come, you know, late at night into Chutz Laretz after 11-hour plane trip, where all you can do pretty much is eat and barely sleep, first thing and the only thing I really was interested in when I got off the plane, show me the first bed. That's it. But what kind of host puts his guest to bed right away? So they prepared a lavish meal and sit down, have a nice meal. It was at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night. I ate in the plane 3 meals. I'm really not interested in eating a lavish meal. Just show me the bed. But I'm like, I got to be a good guest. So I sit down at the table. What kind of host lets his guest eat and run, right? You have to talk at least for an hour, right, to be a good host. So I'm sitting there with toothpicks in my eyelids trying to hold them open, right, and in order to let these people be good hosts, because what could they say? What's it called? Did you treat your guest properly? Did you give him a meal? Did you speak to him? Fine, but if they really would have been concerned about what I needed, it wasn't the meal, it wasn't the talking, it was the bed. Okay, but they wouldn't have looked like good hosts. And they didn't think about that. But Lamaisa, that's what was going on. So who's the giver over there? I'm the giver. I'm giving them the ability to be a good host at my expense. And they're really taking. So that was Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu did what was good for the guests, not what was good for him. He would have gotten a better name. He would have felt better, pat himself on the back. Great host, right? But Lamaisa, that's not what these people needed. They needed to eat and run. That's the way it looked. And therefore, staying under the tree was better for them. There's also situations, the opposite, where you can take and you're really a giver. But you're doing it for the sake of someone else. You're not taking for your sake. You're taking for somebody else's sake. How's that? The first case. You take in order to be able to give. When I was a teenager, and I grew up in Miami, there were not too many Gedolim who lived in Miami. At least not spiritual Gedolim. You rarely saw, except if you went to the hotels, there were plenty of Gedolim that came there to collect money. But I didn't live in that area. And the Satmar Rebbe, the old Satmar Rebbe, Rabbi Yolish, came and spent winters in Miami with a Balabos Moskowitz, who put him up in his own little apartment or whatever, and treated him royally. So as a teenager, it was a novelty. I wanted to go see what this big Hasidic Rebbe looked like. So I went, and he had his own little room, and there was a waiting room, and sometimes the door was opened, and he would come out or whatever and escort somebody out, so you get to see what he looked like. And I remember he had this gigantic robe that he wore, and the robe had two big pockets in the front. I mean, gigantic pockets, like shopping bags. And they were filled with money. With not dollar bills, $100 bills. Just overflowing in these things. I remember thinking to myself, I must have been a 15, 16-year-old, when I grow up, I'm going to be a Rebbe. This is a great Parnassus. This is what I'm going to be. Got to get myself one of those robes. Never worked out. In any case. So I said to myself, boy, this rabbi really knows how to get, you know, take money. Then I saw poor people would come. And first of all, rich people would come. And they want a bracha. They want to give him a kvittel. And they handed him a wad of bills. And he stuffed it in the pocket. They didn't look at it. He stuffed it in the pocket. Then I saw people came and started telling him their tzaris. Poor people, what's it called? People dressed in rags and people crying. And I saw he put his hand in the pocket, grab out a wad of bills, not even look at it, to see what it was. and give it over to the other person. No, look, that was it. Until the pockets were empty. When they were empty, more rich people came, and they filled up again pretty fast. And then he emptied them. Could anyone say that the Satmar Rebbe was a taker? No. He took in order to give. It was a clearinghouse. Right? He took, he wasn't Robin Hood, he didn't take from the rich and give to the poor. But he accepted what people wanted to give him in order to be able to give. He didn't have his own money to give. This way he was able to be a Baal Chesed. He was able to give people what they needed. Otherwise he couldn't. That's how Avraham Avinu took from Paro. The Rabbanu Shel Olam promised Avraham that he'd make him rich. Avraham was destitute, the Medrash says. He couldn't pay for his motel bills on the way down to Mitzrayim. There was a famine. He couldn't afford to feed his students, his family. He was in debt. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam promised him that he would make him rich. So he saw this as the Rabbanu Shel Olam sending him the riches through Paro. Right? Paro did something terrible. Paro owed him, right, for what he did. And he gave him presents to try to make up, to Mephias him. And Avraham took it. He understood. This is what the Rabbanu Shel Olam, a famous joke that I heard recently again, right? Person has tremendous emunah in the Rabbanu Shel Olam, there's a flood. The water comes up to his ankles, right? And a boat passes by, a rowboat, and they tell him, get in. He says, no, 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 God is going to save me. So they go on. Water comes up now to his, what's it called, to his neck. A bigger boat goes by. He told him, get in. He said, no, 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 God is going to save me. Go. Finally the water is over his head. He goes on the top of the roof. And a helicopter goes by. And they tell him, we're here to save you. Jump on the ladder. No, God's going to save me. Finally the water goes over his head and he drowns. Comes before the Beis and Shalmala and he says, Rabbanu Shel Olam, I believed in you so much. Why didn't you save me? He said, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. What more could I do? So the Avraham Avinu saw that the Rabbanu Shel Olam promised him riches. He's not going to send it down with parachutes from the heavens. This is the way that he gave Avraham what he needs in order that he should pay his debts and support his family. So he wasn't taking for himself. He was taking in order to give. It says the heart is the symbol of chesed. Lev tov. Because the heart gives blood to the whole body. But everybody knows the heart takes as much blood from the body as it gives out. So why is it a giver? It's a taker too. The answer is that blood that the heart takes from the body is not for itself. The heart's blood supply is on the outside of the heart. What it takes in from the body is to send to the lungs to get oxygen, to send again to the body oxygenated blood. So the heart takes in, but only to give out. So it's not taking, it's giving. It's all giving. That's Avraham with Paro. He took in order to give. Then there's a second kind of taking that's really giving. Where you're taking to give covet to the person who gives you. Person wants to get the honor of giving you something. Right? It's a halachin kedushin. Right? A man has to give a woman something to make a kedushin. And say harei at mekudeshesli. If the woman gives the man something, whether she says harei atah mekudeshesli, or he says harei at mekudeshesli with what you gave me, it's no good. Man has to give. There's an exception, the Gemara says. By an adam chashuv. A very important person. Who people want to give presents to. And it's a covet for them. And they're willing to pay for it. They would pay people to convince the president to take a present. Right? Or to pay, convince the king to take a present. Right? And it's a covet that my present is in the White House. Right? My present is in the palace. So it's worth money. So if a woman gives a man like that a present, and he receives it, he says, with the enjoyment I gave you, that I accepted your present, and that has a market value, because you would pay money to have somebody convince me to take it, I'm marrying you. That's called giving. Even though he's the one taking the present. He's giving them covet. When I first became a Rav in Miami, I decided I'm going to be a tzaddik, and I'm not taking any presents. Not taking anything people give me for mechiras chametz, that used to be in America, that they sell your chametz, you give the rabbi money, Purim, they gave the rabbi money, they give shalach manas, they give the rabbi money, or presents. People came to Eretz Yisrael, they came back, they always brought the present for the rabbi. Most people. So I said, I have a salary, I live on my salary, soni matanas yichya, I don't want balabatim to think that I, take presents, I should be beholden, I'm not taking any presents. Lasted for a little while, Until one day, one of my elderly balabatim came to me, and he said, Rabbi, you'll excuse me, but I'll be very blunt with you. And listen to what I'm telling you. He said, you think you're a big tzaddik because you don't accept presents from people. People come back from Eretz Israel, want to give you presents, you tell them, sorry, don't accept any presents. You are insulting these people. They want the honor of giving you a present, and you're telling them that your presents mean nothing to me. Don't insult these people. You don't want to use the present, you want to, whatever, it's your business. But take it at least. Give them the respect of accepting their presence. You don't have to convince me. From then on, I take presents. No problem. I don't get too many, but I accept the thing. So, he's right. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Avimelech. Avimelech was embarrassed for what he did. And he wanted to cover up the shame. And he wanted to show that Avraham and Sarah have no hard feelings. If they wouldn't accept the presents, right, it would have been insulting to Avimelech. So they took it out of his covet, to give him covet. Right? I don't usually take presents, says Avraham Avinu, but here I'm doing it for your sake. If I'm worried about what me, I don't want to look like I'm a taker, but I'm willing to look like I'm a taker if that's what you need. That's giving, even though it looks like you're receiving. You're taking, but you're really giving. And the third case where taking is really giving is the following, and this is very important, especially in Jewish homes. In every relationship, there's usually give and take. Sometimes this one gives, sometimes this one gives, sometimes this one takes, sometimes it takes. My wife always tells me we have that kind of relationship. She always gives and I always take. It's give and take, in any case. But that it may be true, because that is a Jewish mother-wife syndrome. Jewish mothers and wives are martyrs. They want nothing for themselves, only for their children, only for their husband. Right? You could have a ton of food, okay, and you have little kids sitting at the table, and a husband and wife, and they bring this ton of food to the table. The wife says, no, not for me, give it to my child. Well, you give it to your child. The whole army could eat this food. Nobody's going to suffer if you eat. Right? No, not for me, not for me. I'm going to embarrass my wife. I'll tell you, Misa, what it means. No, maybe you'll learn the lesson. No. It's a prime example. Okay. If you want, you can ask her. She'll tell you. You can ask me afterwards. That is a Jewish wife's syndrome, right? Not for me, martyr, right? Even where it doesn't make any sense. So they only want to give and never take. That sounds very nice, but it's not so nice. Because if you're always giving and never taking, that means the other side of the relationship, either your children or your husband, are always taking and never giving. And that is very demeaning. Sometimes you have to take in order to enable the other person to be a giver. You're giving that person the self-respect of being able to be a giver and not always on the taking end. That's what's it called. Another reason. That's why Avraham took from Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek wanted to give Meiser. Avraham was the only other Kohen in the world who could take Meiser. If Avraham didn't take, he wouldn't enable Malki Tzedek to give. So he took in order to let Malki Tzedek give. And therefore, Chesed is more than just taking, giving, right? It's being sensitive to what the other person really needs. And if that other person needs it, you should take. You're taking not for yourself, you're taking to fulfill their needs, then that's giving. And if what the other person needs is to be given, and you give them the way that they need it, not the way that will make you feel better, or make you look better, or whatever, that's also called giving. That's what chesed is. Totally divesting yourself of yourself. And that's why the test of Rivka wasn't just, can she give a drink to a camel? Okay, even though it was a lot of, somebody told me it was like 200 gallons of water to 10 camels. That's how much camels drink. So it was a big amount, okay? It was a lot of trips, I guess, to the well. To give these camels. But that wasn't the Iker. The Beis Halevi says beautifully, what was the thing over here? First of all, Eliezer says, he didn't say, could you feed my camels? He just went there, and he didn't even ask anything. He just stuck his tongue out and looked thirsty, right? And she told him, what's it called? I'll give you a drink. Okay? And he drank. And then she said, Gablig Malechesh. Only after he drank did she say, I'll also give to your camels. What happened was like this. First of all, why didn't he ask her for a drink of water? Right? He waited until just the opposite. No, that's not what happened. He didn't stand there with his tongue out and look thirsty and see if she would offer him a drink of water. He asked her for a drink of water. Okay, the opposite. He asked her. Okay? Hashki'ini matmai mikadeh. Can you give me a little bit of water? Why didn't she want to make the test bigger? See if she offers it. So some people say because it wouldn't be proper for a little girl to go over to a man and offer him water. She's a tsanua. So that wouldn't happen. I was thinking the opposite. Sometimes it's easier to do chesed for a person if you volunteer it. Then you feel good, right? I volunteered this chesed. But if somebody asks you for a favor, it's very hard to do. Because then you can't pat yourself on the back and say, I volunteered this. Who were they to ask me? You know what? Who said they needed it? Whatever. So you think of a million reasons why not to do it, because the person asked you already. You're doing something that somebody asked you to do. So he asked her Badavka. Second thing. So he took a drink of water, and only after that did she offer for the camels. Why? So the Beis Halevi says the following. She gave him water, and he only drank part of it and left part over. And it was still in her bucket, whatever she gave him the water in. She had a big problem now. She said to herself, why is this grown man asking a three-year-old girl, no matter how mature she was, to give him water? He's much more capable of going drawing water for himself than get me. It's one of two possibilities. Either he's a lazy bum, or he's sick. Now, if he's a lazy bum, okay, I'll do him the chesed. He asked me, I'll give him. But what if he's sick, and now he left water over in the thing? What am I going to do with that water? The proper thing would be probably to drink the leftovers and show him that, you know, I don't think that he is, you know, sick or something, or I'm going to catch something from him. But if I pour it out, I'm going to insult him, because he's going to think that I don't want to drink his leftovers, there may be something wrong with him. So I don't want to insult him. On the other hand, I don't want to get sick. So she came up with a great idea. I'll give it to the camel. Camels won't get sick from people being sick, right? It's a Roy Lachilas Kelev, Roy Lachilas Gomo, right? Animals can eat what people get sick on, they don't get sick on. She said, on the other hand, if I only give the camel what's left over, he's going to know I'm doing it because I don't want to drink it. So I'm going to have to offer all his camels so he'll think that I'm giving it just as a beginning of the whole process. So she's very smart to think, what does this guy really need? And how can I do it in a way that won't hurt his feelings? Even if it means taking 200 gallons of water and giving all the camels so I don't hurt his feelings by pouring out the water and giving him the impression that I think something's wrong with the water and that obviously I wouldn't drink his leftovers. So that, the Beis Halevi says, there was a tremendous of chachma, but more than chachma. It was sensitivity to who he was. That's chesed. Chesed is being able to divest yourself of your needs, your desires, and put yourself in somebody else's place completely. That leads to emunah. That's the kind of person that's a chassid. Chassid means, I'm not me. Shali shalcha, v'shalcha shalcha. Everything is for you, not for me. And that's the most like the Rabbanu Shalom, because by the Rabbanu Shalom, everything is for who he gives it to, not for himself. He doesn't need anything for himself. So that's the connection between Gemilus Chasodim and a Chosid.
So the Rav is saying that she didn't think of the camels themselves,
right?
That they needed water,
right?
That's also right.
That she figured, look, the camels will get water one way or the other, right? But I don't want to insult him, and if I can make it to the camels, fine. But it wasn't the main thing. Wasn't give camels, so you'll be a nice, you know, good person. No, the more was concerned about his sensitivity, and that's why she gave for the camels, not because she wanted to be a great, you know, people would say the next day in the newspaper, right, girl says 200 gallons of water to the camel or whatever on Yeshiva News or whatever, that would next thing to be put out.
So it also seems from that, as the Rav was saying, as far as Shidduchim is concerned, if a person does say kindness,
if it's real chesed, then that's a tremendous. It's more important than how they stack their dishes or if they use a white tablecloth on Shabbos or not. Believe it or not. Okay.